So we're about to start the halachos of Amir la'akum, and in doing so, I first wanted to go through a very important paragraph by the Chafetz Chaim. It's not found in the Chafetz Chaim in the Mishneh Berurah, it's found in the Chafetz Chaim's other sefer called Shem Olam. And he writes there about his feelings about the issue with regard to Amir la'akum. One of the members of Erech Habura sent me a very important response to my text today, and wrote out that people often forget that Amir al-Akum is not a heter. Amir al-Akum is an iser on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do Amir al-Akum. There are some times when you are allowed to violate Amir al-Akum and ask a non-Jew to do something. But Amir al-Akum is an iser on Shabbos. You're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do things. And here, the Chafetz Chaim points out that this is not a new problem. This is something that members of his generation did not appreciate either. And it's something that he lays out for us. So let's read it together. There are people who are not careful with the mitzvahs that they're supposed to observe. And he says, an example of that is, he says, I find that it's become totally hefker when it comes to the laws of Amir la'akum. Shekivan sheyachin avuram hamulyar samavar b'shabbos. That they allow the non-Jew to turn on the hot water urn for them on Shabbos. That's his example of Amir la'akum. So now, if we would fast forward 100 years since the passing of the Chafetz Chaim, passed away in 1933, so a lot has advanced since then. I would imagine that people are asking the Akum to do many, many more activities, more than just plugging in the hot water urn on Shabbos, but that's the example that he gives. V'kama gadol hu ha'avon hazeh, shafilum asa ha'akum me'atzmo. Even if the non-Jew does it for himself, meaning he wants a cup of coffee. Im ha-Yisrael mevin shebishvilo asahu. If let's say the non-Jew pretends that he wants a cup of coffee and therefore plugs in the hot water, but really in essence we all know the truth that he only did it because he knows that I am the one who expects to have a hot cup of coffee when I wake up. Asur lishtos mimenu. I'm not allowed to derive any benefit from that hot water. I'm not allowed to use it on Shabbos. Afilu im yirtza ha-Yisrael, even if I want to cover the mistake by then giving the Nachri a hot cup of coffee afterward to say, it wasn't really for me, it was really for him, says the Chafetz Chaim, since we know that the real reason why this was done had nothing at all to do with the non-Jew, he doesn't care. He really did it clearly for me. Certainly, if I go and I tell him outright that he should heat up the hot water for me, that for sure is not allowed. But even if I don't say anything, but it's clear that the only reason he's doing it is for my benefit. Yesh iser al ha'amira v'al hashtia acharkach. Not only are you not allowed to ask him to do it, but even if he does it on his own, but it's clear that he's doing it for me, that would be something that I'm no longer allowed to derive benefit from. Va'afilu im tzivahu miba'od yom, says the Mishneh Berurah in the Shem Olam, even if I ask him before Shabbos. So this is something people often don't realize, and we'll get into it in a few minutes. What if I ask the Nachri before Shabbos? These are the things that I need done over Shabbos. I don't want to be involved with you on Shabbos. I don't want to ask you to do anything. So before Shabbos, I'm going to give you all the instructions. Amir al-Nachri applies to that as well. You're not allowed to leave instructions that the Nachri should do malacha for you on Shabbos. That would not be permissible either. Look at the next paragraph. V'hine chein anurom be'einenu. He says, we see very clearly, she'osam ha'anashim she'maschilim laval iser didivrayim, that those people who started off with only an iser d'rabbanan of Amir al-Nachri, libasov ba'im li'idei iser skila. In the end, it leads them to do things that are far worse. And he goes on to explain, because first they tell him to do something which only involves Amir al-Nachri. Then the water's not hot enough, so they bring a coal. Back then when they didn't have, you know, just the ability to plug it in like we have today. So then I would go ahead and light a fire in order that it should be hotter. Or I would stoke the coals in order that it should be a higher flame underneath the water, that it should cook up quicker. And writes the Mishneh Berurah that that's the way it starts, and unfortunately then it gets to other problems, and he says it leads not only to Amir al-Nachri, in the end it's going to lead potentially for many people into an issue of a potential Isser D'Araisa on Shabbos. So again, you can read the rest of this paragraph on your own, but I thought that this was a very important way to introduce the sugya of Amir La'akum, when we're talking about this serious issue. And by the way, when we talk about Amir La'nachri, the Gemara Maseches Baba Kama wonders whether or not this is only relevant to Hilchos Shabbos, or perhaps this should be something that we should extend to other areas of Halacha as well. One of the most common examples that many people are unaware of, but it's something that the Gemara itself writes in the conclusion of that question. The Gemara concludes that Amir al-Nachri applies not only to Shabbos, but it applies to other things as well. For example, the example that the Gemara gives is, we have an Isser of neutering an animal. You're not allowed to do Siris HaBehema. So we have an Isser to neuter an animal. Says the Gemara, the minig always was that when you have a dog, you have an animal, and you don't want it to have the male organ, so you give it to a non-Jew, and you ask them to do it. So the Gemara says, that is the example of Amir al-Nachri. You're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to neuter the animal for you. You're not allowed to do Siris Ayidei Akum. That is the same prohibition as Amir al-Nachri that we find by Shabbos, is something that we find by Shar Isurim as well. So this is a very important issue to keep in mind. It's something very important to think about. I remember a number of years ago, there was a shaila that somebody asked from Eretz Yisrael, and it was at the time when I was learning with my father, and it was with regard to Amir al-Nachri. It was with regard to neutering a dog. So what happened was, there was a woman who did not have epilepsy. She had some kind of other disease, I forgot what it was called, but she had a very hard time keeping her balance for whatever reason. And they came up with some kind of strain of a dog in Eretz Yisrael with some kind of very sensitive cord that the dog was on, some kind of leash that was held by the owner. And it goes through 18 months of training together with the owner, and it learns every motion, every movement, and how the person breathes. And it starts feeling as the person is tipping over to one direction or the other, and the dog quickly catches the fall by pulling, by putting enough pull in the other direction. It's an amazing breakthrough that they came up with there. And this is a woman who was going through the training. The dog was extremely expensive. The training was very, very expensive. And she was already halfway through the training, and then she realized that the dog was not yet neutered. And the question then became, what is she supposed to do? How do you deal with a dog that is not neutered when she needs it for her health, when she needs it in order that she shouldn't endanger herself? So you could say, well, what's the problem? She has no problem having a dog that is not neutered in her house. Her problem was that when she goes to work, they don't allow a dog that is not neutered into the office. So that was the shaila. So am I allowed to violate Amir al-Nachri just because I want to go work in my office and they're not going to let me in without the dog? Very interesting shaila. But the point being, again, it's not for now to discuss the whole parameters of the issue. The point being, the Gemara clearly says Amir al-Nachri is not only a prohibition that applies to Shabbos, it's something that applies equally to other Isurim in the Torah as well. The Gemara gives us a little bit of an insight as to how chamor, how severe, how seriously we take the prohibition of Amir al-Nachri. So the Gemara says in Maseches Ksubas, but Usha Hiskinu, Chazal, when they came to Usha, that happened to be the community where they were, they had a takana, they made a rule, that Al Yivazvez Yoser Mechomesh, anytime I'm involving myself in a tzedakah endeavor, I should never give away more than a fifth of my assets. Doesn't matter how rich I am, I should not be giving away more than a chomesh nechasav. That's what the Gemara says. How do you know? Because the Gemara learns this from a svara, Shema Yitzdarach Lebrios. Because what's going to happen? I'm going to give away half of my money, half of my savings, and then it's going to turn around that I'm not going to have for myself. Then I'm going to have to go begging people to help me. So the Gemara says you should never give, it all has to be in moderation, you should never give more than a chomesh of your money away to tzedakah. And the Gemara learns it from Sukkim as well, we find by the Avos, Haseras Ranulach. Anyway, not relevant, but that's what the Gemara says. There are some notable exceptions. When am I allowed to spend more money on a mitzvah? So the Gemara says, for example, the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos or Ner Chanukah. If I only have X amount of dollars, and the Neris Chanukah are going to cost me more than a fifth of the money that I have to be willing to pay that. And that's a major question, why that should be the case. Why are those the two exceptions? What about Kiddush on Shabbos? What about anything else? Why are these the two exceptions that are so pronounced in the Gemara that they would be something that I have to be willing to pay more than a chomesh nechasav to be able to afford myself the opportunity? So Rav Soloveitchik famously said the reason why is because when we highlight the Neris Chanukah, when we highlight the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos, the Gemara says that we do those because of Persume Nisa. We're reminding ourselves of the incredible miracle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did by Yetzias Mitzrayim and the great miracle that he did by Neris Chanukah. Because of that, we remind ourselves of the fact that Hashem went beyond the natural rule, the natural law and order that our world works in. He went beyond. He created a miracle in our history. And therefore, to commemorate that, we do something to highlight the miracle. Therefore, if Soloveitchik explained, if we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we say, Bayamim Ahayim Bazman Hazeh, the same way you made a miracle then, we hope that you make miracles for us today. We hope you cure cancer. We hope you do all kinds of things that will be miraculous for our generation. You did miracles to our forefathers in Mitzrayim. You did miracles to our forefathers by Kriyas Yamsev and by Neiros Chanukah. So we hope you do the same. Said Rav Soloveitchik, if we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go beyond the laws of nature, to do something special for us, then we have to be willing to go beyond our natural state of being as well. And even though it's normal to have moderation and to only give up to a fifth of my money to do a mitzvah, when it comes to these mitzvahs, when I'm asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go beyond in His, so then I have to be willing to go beyond in mine as well. Interesting Gemara. That's what the Gemara says. The Ramah then extends it and he says, it doesn't only apply to giving tzedakah, that I have to be willing to give up to Chamash Nechasa, but the Ramah says, anytime I have a mitzvah that I have to observe, let's say matzah, or maror, anything, I have to be willing to spend up to Chamash Nechasa, which could be a tremendous amount of money. Sometimes you have a shortage of esrogim. It's going to be a fortune to buy an esrog, but I have to be willing to pay up to Chamash Nechasa in order to provide myself with a kosher esrog for Sukkot. Then, the Shulchan Aruch follows that up by saying, that is all with regard to a mitzvah saseh. That's with regard to matzah, maror, shofar, tefillin, tzitzis, lulav, all of that. What about when it comes to not violating a lo saseh? Somebody comes to me and says, I want you to eat this non-kosher sandwich. If you pay me enough money, I'll let you get away with it. So how much money do I have to be willing to give up not to eat the sandwich? How much money do I have to be willing to forego not to violate a lo saseh? Says the Gemara, kol hon beso. I have to be willing to give up all of my money not to violate a lo saseh shebet Torah. Amazing. Gives us a perspective of either how unimportant money is or how important a lo saseh shebet Torah is. One or the other. But that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. You have to be willing to give up kol hon beso. And on that Shulchan Aruch, the Vilna Gaon has a comment where he says, that is not only the case when it comes to a melacha d'arais on Shabbos, or when it comes to eating non-kosher food, or when it comes to eating on Yom Kippur or anything else. The Vilna Gaon says, even when we're dealing with just a shvus midirabanan, even if the Nachmi says, I want you to violate an issa d'rabanan on Shabbos, you have to be willing to bargain him for kol hon beso. You have to be willing to give all of your money not to have to violate an Isser D'Rabbanan on Shabbos. How do you know that? Where does the Vilna Gaon get such an idea? Vilna Gaon gets it from the Gemara with regard to Amira L'Nachri. Because the Gemara tells us a fascinating story. The Gemara says, I didn't put it on here, but the Gemara tells us in Maseches Shabbos, Kuf Chaf Aleph Amin Aleph, there's a big fire in town. Now we're talking about a case that Kemat never happens. Because whenever there's a fire, we have to put it out. It's always going to be something that endangers people's lives. It's not something we can wait around. It's not something we can philosophize. Oh, maybe it will go out on its own. You have to put the fire out. And that is something that we have to be very, very vigilant and careful about. Not only because we have to make sure the people in our own house are safe, but now our homes are so close to each other, the amount of time that it takes, chalila, from a fire to catch from one person's home to the next, you never know. It can be seconds, it can be minutes, and we don't have time to start making a cheshbon whether this makes sense to put out or not. So the case that the Gemara gives is not really relevant to the kind of lives that we live. But imagine for a moment, you live on a desert island, and you are the only house there, and there's a fire in the house, and the house is going to burn down to the ground, and nobody else's life is in danger. Whatever. However you figure out that scenario, nobody else's life is in danger. Along comes the fireman. He happens not to be Jewish. And he says, hey, there's a fire here, let me put it out. I'm actually pretty happy that he came along. This happened on Shabbos. I'm actually pretty happy that he came along and he's prepared to put out the fire. I didn't ask him to do it. So do I have to stop him? There's a malacha on Shabbos called Mechaber. I'm not allowed to put out a fire. So the same way I'm not allowed to put out a fire, maybe he's not allowed to put out the fire either. So the Gemara says, no. I'm not allowed to actively engage him and ask him to do it. But if he as a good Samaritan comes along and starts putting out the fire, I don't have to stop him. Nachri Shabala Chabos, if a Nachri comes along and on his own decides to put it out, I'm allowed to let him do it. It's not my problem, it's not my issue. I didn't ask him to do so. The implication of that is that I would not be allowed to ask him myself. again, if somebody's life is in danger, or even a suffix being in danger, of course you put it out. And of course you call someone who knows how to do it. But that's not the case here. So would I be allowed to summon him actively and ask him to do the malacha for me? It's clear from the Gemara that I'm not allowed to do that. My whole house is going to burn down. I have all of my money under the mattress. People still do that? I don't know. People used to do that. That's the myth. They used to do that. Did people used to do that? Tell me. People used to put money under the mattress. I wasn't alive back then. It's one etzah. So what the implication is that I would not be allowed to ask the Nachri to put out the fire. What do you mean? I'm going to lose all my money. I'm going to lose everything I have. My whole property, my whole house. From here, says the Vilna Gaon, you see, you're not allowed to violate Amir al-Nachri. That's clear. The Gemara says you can't do Amir al-Nachri even when it means that I'm going to lose a lot of money. And even, he says, you see, even when it means Kol Hon Beso. And from there, the Vilna Gaon says, that's how you learn a general klal. That if a Nachri comes along and says that I have to do some kind of Isser, which is only an Isser Derabbanan, and I have to be willing to give up a whole lot of money not to violate it. Now the first question that we need to focus on whenever we talk about Amir al-Nachri is this an Isser D'Araisa or is it an Isser Derabbanan? Where does this come from? That is a very important question that we look to Parshas Bo, look at Amar Gimel here, where the Gemara, with the Psukim discuss it. Vayom harishon mikra kodesh v'yom hashvi mikra kodesh yalachem, kam alacha lo ye'asa bahem. Pasuk says when it comes to celebrating Pesach, not allowed to do malach on the first day or the last day. And then it adds on a word, kol malacha lo ye'ase bahem. It doesn't say lo sasa kol malacha, you shouldn't do. It says lo ye'ase bahem, which means it should not be done on them. What does that mean? Rashi says, lo ye'ase bahem afila yidei acherim. It doesn't just mean that I'm not allowed to do malacha. It means I can't have other people do malacha on my behalf either. Ask the Ramban, who are we referring to? Who are we talking about? I'm not allowed to do malacha and I can't ask someone else to do malacha. Who's the someone else? Everybody else has to observe Pesach just like I have to. So who would I possibly ask? Says the Ramban. It must be that I'm talking about a non-Jew. And that is what's being referred to here. Not only am I not allowed to do malacha, but I'm not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do malacha. And that's what it means. Kol malacha lo ye'asa bahem. Beis Yosef quotes this. And he wonders whether or not this is to be taken literally. Should we assume that this is really a makar, a source in Chumash itself, that Amir al-Nachri is an Issa D'Araisa? Or do you say, no, this is Lav Dafka, it doesn't really mean literally that this is learned from the Psukim themselves? To which the Beis Yosef comes to the conclusion, this is clearly only an Asmachta. This is not to be taken literally, this is only an Issa D'Rabbanan. And that is clear in the Gemara Masechet Shabbos, the Gemara in Erevin, Bab Metzia, Baba Kama, where the Gemara clearly says numerous times that Amir al-Nachri is only an Isser Midrabanan. It is not at all considered to be an Isser D'Araisa. So now that we've established that Amir al-Nachri is not permissible on Shabbos, and we know that it's only an Isser D'Rabanan, you have to ask yourself, why did the Chachamim think it was so important to institute this? There has to be a reason. They can't just arbitrarily come up with Isurim. They can't just invent something new. What was the reason why they said that you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you on Shabbos? It's interesting that there are three opinions in this matter. Two of them are Rashi. Rashi writes two different things in two different mesechtos. And the Rambam writes the third opinion. So reason number one that we'll focus on is the Rambam. Let's see. The Rambam writes in the sixth parak in Hilchos Shabbos on the second side of the page. Aser lomar l'goy lasos lana malacha b'Shabbos. We're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for us on Shabbos. And the Rambam that explains, Alpha Pisha Eina Mitzvah Ala Shabbos, even though the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach do not include keeping Shabbos. So why am I not allowed to ask him to do a malacha? What's the problem? Rambam says, no. Alpha Pisha Amar Lo Mikodem HaShabbos. Then the Rambam says, even if I asked him before Shabbos started, I don't talk to him on Shabbos about malacha. I gave him all the instructions before Shabbos started. Va'afal pisha eno tzarech la'osa malacha, even if I don't need it, el la'achara Shabbos. V'davar zeh isur midivrei sofer. And the Rambam says this is only midirabanan. Why? Kidei shelo tehe Shabbos kala be'eneihem v'yavo lasos ba'atzma. If I'm going to have a non-Jew doing malacha for me on a consistent basis on Shabbos, ultimately I'm going to get used to that malacha being done in my house, and then I'm going to come to do it on my own. And therefore, says the Rambam, the reason why Chazal instituted this Isser of Amir al-Nachri on Shabbos is because They didn't want me to ultimately do the malacha on my own. In order to prevent me from doing it on my own, they're going to say, there's no malacha in your house on Shabbos. If there's no malacha being done in my house on Shabbos, I'm going to make sure that I'm not doing the malacha on my own either. Rashi in Maseches Shabbos writes a different reason. And he said, look, we have a concept in Kol HaTorah Kula called Shlichus. Shlichus means I have the ability not only to do something on my own, but I also have the ability to send a proxy. I could send an agent to do it for me. And therefore Rashi says that works in a good direction, works in a bad direction. If Rahman al-Itzlan, somebody makes a whole plot to murder another person, but they don't want to be the one to do it, they just send a friend of theirs to do it, you're complicit. You're part of the act of murder. It's not considered to be something that you're detached from because you sent someone else. No, you helped them, you assisted, and you are part of everything that happened. So that goes in both directions. And therefore Rashi says here, we have a right to say, what's the problem? So one second, that's advanced Talmud, so give me a second. So Rashi says that we have a concept of shlichus. I can send somebody to be mafresh truma for me, I can send somebody to be mekadesh anisha for me, to do all kinds of things, so I would be able to send somebody to be mechal Shabbos for me. Therefore Rashi says, we have to make sure not to send the nachri, because it's as if I'm doing it myself. The million-dollar question is, the Gemara clearly says that there's no shlichus for an akum, which means, if I want to be mekadesh anisha, and I send, the whole concept of being mekadesh al-yedei shlichus is very strange. Imagine you go to a chuppah, and you come there, and the chassan doesn't show up. He said, this friend wasn't in the mood to show up. It's a strange thing to do. So in the times of the Gemara, it wasn't so strange, because it's not like we have it today. They got engaged a year before. They lived in different countries, different places. So he sends somebody because he loves the girl so much and he doesn't want somebody else to marry her. He wants to make sure that he gets her. So he sends one of his friends because he's unable to travel right now, and he says, make sure you're mekadesh the woman and let her know how much I love her. The reason I'm not here is not because I don't like her, it's because I love her so much and I don't want anyone to get her. That's the mekadesh al-yedei shliach. Today it would come out to be very strange that you would be under the chuppah and there would be somebody else there other than the chassan. He would say, you know, I'm being mekadesh you on behalf of my friend. So it's a strange thing for us to imagine, but in the times of the Gemara it actually made some sense. So that is what Rashi says. If we find that there's no concept of shlichus for a nachri, you can't send the non-Jew to be mekadesh and isha for you, so then how can you send the nachri to do malacha for you? And if you do, it shouldn't revert back to you. So that's a question that is discussed by the Achronim, and the answer that they give is that yesh shlichus la'akam l'chumra. Although it's true that he can't be mekadesh and isha, or he can't be mafresh truma, but in the opposite direction, we do assume that there is a concept of shlichus when it's working against me. So that's the way they explain it. You're going to have to get into all the particulars for all the different cases, but that's the way they explain. So those are two reasons. The third reason that Rashi writes is because the Pasuk says, Mimtso chefs l'chavadabra davar, which means there's a certain way that we need to speak and communicate on Shabbos. Lo yehi diburcha shel chol, ki diburcha shel Shabbos. The way you speak on Shabbos is not the way that you're supposed to speak during the week. It should be totally different. It should be noticeably different. And as a result of that, Rashi says, it would be a violation of Dabra Dover, of the way I'm supposed to speak on Shabbos, if the whole Shabbos I'm giving instructions to the people working in my house, I want you to do this, I want you to do that. That's not the way we're supposed to be talking on Shabbos. Just like you're not supposed to do malacha, you shouldn't be talking about doing malacha either. So those are the three reasons. Number one, the Rambam says, because we don't want you to do it by yourself, and if there's going to be malacha going on in your house by a non-Jew, you're going to ultimately do it yourself. Number two, Rashi says the reason why is because of shlichus. Number three, Rashi says in Avodah Zarah, because of Dabra Dover. Why do we need all three of these reasons? So the Stipler famously explains, it would make a major nafkamina. What if I gave instructions to the non-Jew before Shabbos started? So you'll say, there's no problem of Dabra Dover, because I'm not saying anything on Shabbos. So the Shlichus problem still applies. Or, the Rambam's issue of a non-Jew doing Malach in my house is going to ultimately lead me to do the Malach myself. So that's one nafkamina. What about in the other direction? If I ask the non-Jew to do malacha for me after Shabbos, but I give him the instructions today. I say, right after Shabbos is over, I need you to go to the supermarket, I want you to do this, drive my car. I give him all kinds of instructions what I want him to do after Shabbos is over. Well, as far as malacha happening in my house on Shabbos, not a problem. There is no malacha. It's only happening after Shabbos. I'm a religious Jew. I know not to have malacha in my house. However, Dabra Dover is still a concern. So you put all these together, the Stipler says you're going to have issues in either direction. Before Shabbos, after Shabbos, on Shabbos, Amir al-Nachri is something that is not going to be permissible. Okay, Now we go a little bit further, and that is, the Gemara Masechet Shabbos tells us that not only are you not allowed to have a nachri do malacha for you on Shabbos, but if a nachri did do malacha for you on Shabbos, you're not allowed to have benefit from the malacha that was done. So for example, the Gemara there says, a nachri walks into my house Friday night and he sees the lights are all off. He knows that we don't eat in the dark. He understands that it obviously was a mistake, and obviously this was something that we would prefer to have the lights on. So he goes and he turns the lights on. Not because he wants to stay there and enjoy, but because he knows that this will be something that will enhance our Shabbos. That would be a problem of Amir the Nachri, even though I didn't ask him to do it, but he clearly is doing it only for me. And in that situation, the halacha would be that I'm not even allowed to derive benefit after it was done. Lemisha nasa b'shvilo, for the person who was done for, they are not allowed to derive benefit. Writes the Mishnah Berurah, that doesn't mean only for the person who owns the house. It means for everybody sitting at the table. For anybody who would have otherwise been normally here, that would be something that is not permissible. The Rishonim wonder, why? What's the problem? So the Nachri did it already. Now that it's done, why can't I derive benefit from it? What's the problem? So Rashi says, the reason why it's a din. Lo yehani mimelech ha-shabbos. Something wrong was done. You shouldn't derive benefit from something wrong that was done. That's the way it is. And Tosa says, no, that's not why. The reason why is because we want to penalize you. If we penalize you and we say you can't derive benefit, then next week you're going to know that there's no gain in having the Nachri do it for you because you couldn't get benefit from it anyway. So Tosa says this is a way of setting up a penalty to make sure that it will help people from making the mistake the next time around. That's the machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. What would be the difference? I'll take the question in a minute. Difference would be, the Shulchan Aruch says, what happens on Yom Tov Sheni? Let's say a non-Jew turns on the lights for me on Yom Tov Rishon, first day of Pesach, and now we come to the second Seder, second night of Pesach. So are we allowed to sit in the lit room or not? What would you say? Depends what the reason is. Right? No, it depends what the reason why I'm not allowed to derive benefit. If the reason I'm not allowed to derive benefit is because we're afraid maybe I'm going to ask the non-Jew to do it for me, that applies in Yom Tov Rishon and Yom Tov Sheni. I'm not allowed to do malach on the first day of Yom Tov, I'm not allowed to do malach on the second day of Yom Tov. If the reason why I'm not allowed to derive benefit is because something was done be'isser, and if something was done be'isser, I cannot benefit from it, well, in this case, either it was done on a day when it's not really Yom Tov, and today is the real day of Yom Tov, so therefore it was not done be'isser. Or, now it's already the second night of Pesach, and tonight is Chol. So it's already enough time away from the time that the Isser was done. It's no longer Yom Tov. So that would be a major nafkamina. Shulchan Aruch, they discuss that. What would be the halacha? Are you allowed to be Mekel like Rashi, or do you have to be Machmer like Rabbeinu Tam? Yeah. So that's why I really just wanted to get into some of the major points of Amir Lakum. Obviously, we're going to have to look into everything in specific details as we go through. Amir Lakum is very, very important, and it's very complicated sometimes. So we have to look at the very specific parameters as we'll go through. But hold on to that question. It's a very important one for us to discuss. Okay, so... I'm sorry, what? Yeah, that's a big shaila. That having a Jew on Yom Tov Sheni, let's say you're in Eretz Yisrael, and you have somebody who's not observing Yom Tov Sheni, whether or not you're allowed to have them do malacha for you. That's a question for another time, but it's definitely an interesting question. What about something that can be done beheter or beisser? So the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Mem Zayin discusses this, and he says that I'm allowed to give over a malacha to a nachri. Let's say I'm allowed to bring my clothing into the cleaners, even though I know that maybe they're going to do it on Shabbos. Again, if I bring it the minute before Shabbos starts and I say I need it the minute Shabbos is over, then obviously I'm asking them to do malach on Shabbos. Let's say I bring it in Friday morning and I say I'll pick it up Monday. The likelihood is they're probably going to spend some time on Shabbos cleaning some of our clothing. But I didn't ask them to do that. I gave them the whole Friday and the whole Sunday. Happens to be they have a backlog of clients and they have so many customers and they have a lot of issues that they have in the store, so they need to work on Shabbos. But I gave them more than enough time to do it Friday, to do it Sunday, to do it Monday. I'm going to pick it up Monday morning. they choose to do it on Shabbos. In such a case, the Shulchan Aruch says that's called Adaita Denafshe Ka'avid. He's choosing to do the Malach on Shabbos. I didn't instruct him to do so, and therefore that would not be subject to the whole discussion of Amir Lanachmi. I'll give you another example. Let's say you have a non-Jew in the house who's cleaning the dishes on Shabbos, right? So we're not allowed to turn on the hot water on Shabbos. That's a Malach of Bishul. Of course you're not allowed to turn on the hot water. Am I allowed to have the non-Jew clean the dishes? When I ask the non-Jew to clean the dishes, obviously I know what she's going to do. I know that they're going to turn the hot water on. So how can I do that? Isn't that Amir La'akum? The answer is, technically, they could wash the dishes with cold water. It will take a little bit longer to get it cleaner. It's not going to clean as quickly as it will with hot water, but technically that would be a way, a reasonable way, to clean the dishes. Take for another example. We have a malach of schita on Shabbos. You're not allowed to squeeze out. So if you're cleaning the dishes on Shabbos, you have to use a sponge that is non-absorbent. Otherwise, you're going to have problems every time you scrub with the sponge on the plates. That is going to be an issue of schita. So how am I ever allowed to ask somebody else to wash the dishes? I know they're going to use a sponge. The answer is, they have two options. They could use a sponge, or they could use something that's non-absorbent. I know in a million years they would never use the non-absorbent sponge. Who's going to use such a thing? Doesn't matter. But it's right there. It's next to the sink. They have the option to do it this way, to do it that way. That is called Adaita Denafshe Kavod. How far do you take that is a good question. So for example, I remember we were once in the Plaza Hotel, Alav HaShalom, now it's called something else in Yerushalayim, it's called now? Leonardo. So the same elevator, so we were once staying on the 12th floor in the plaza, and there was a family who was staying with us, and there was no crib in the room. So Friday night, everybody went down to eat in the hotel, in the lobby, whatever, downstairs in the dining room. And as they were coming up, they went to somebody at the desk and said, you know, we need a crib. You forgot to put a crib in the room. So they said, what floor are you? 12th floor. So somebody asked, how are you allowed to ask them to bring a crib up to the 12th floor? They said, what do you mean? So Adai to the Nafshe. I didn't ask him to take the elevator. They have the option to walk up the steps. So they're choosing to take the elevator, so that's their problem. That's Nachri Adai to the Nafshe Kavod. It's the same as bringing my clothing into the cleaners. They have an option either to clean it Friday or Sunday or Monday, and they're choosing not to do that. So I gave them an option. There's 12 flights of steps. You can walk up with the crib in your hands and set it up. Or you can go up in the elevator. So my father thought that's unreasonable. What do you mean? That's not something that we can imagine a Nachri would ever do in his right mind. If you're on the first floor or the second floor, it just so happens, if you work in a hotel and a customer needs something on a second floor, and you want to have really good customer service, and the elevator is taking a long time, it's feasible that maybe the worker will walk up one or two flights of steps to make the customer happy. But under no circumstances is he going to schlep up 12 flights of steps with a crib to go set it up so the customer will be happy. It's no way. So in such a case, that then becomes a little bit more problematic. Is that true that in fact you have a right to say, Nachri Adaita Denafshe Ka'avid? We can assume, well, he's doing this on his own choice, even when it's something that is completely unreasonable. A very interesting discussion that is raised also in the Sefer Aruch HaShabbos. A few Sfarim talk about this issue. Yeah.
I have a question for that. Whether or not the owner is Jewish.
Right. If the owner of the cleaners is Jewish, does that make a difference? Very interesting question. Very interesting question. So that really touches on an entirely different sugya of Lifnei Iver L'Shitei Michshol. And what are the parameters? The question was, if the owner of the store is Jewish, the owner of the cleaners is Jewish, am I allowed to go in when I know it's going to cause him to do malacha? So in the last year, I was discussing very briefly that a young woman in the shul just asked a question this week. She actually works for Google, and they have a rotation. She works for Gmail. I said, are you reading all of our emails? So she works for Google, and they have a team that is always a tech support. So somebody on their team always has to be available every day of the week. It's probably not just one person. It's probably more than one person. So she said that her manager is a religious Muslim woman who's wonderful and who's very respectful of her and said, I understand that Saturday you're obviously not going to want to be on call, so you have every right to switch with another coworker. It's not a problem at all. It's fine. So she wanted to know, does she have to look into it to figure out which workers are actually Jewish, maybe some of them are not religious, before she makes a switch? Does she have to be concerned about it? It's a very interesting question. But it really touches on a totally different sugya of Lifnei Iver, not so much about Amir Lanachri. He's not a Nachri, he's a Jew. Yeah. You had a question? Adam? No? Okay. So now let me just point out something else. The Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah both write in Siman Shin Zayin that the same way I'm not allowed to ask a non-Jew beferish to do something for me, so too I'm not allowed to be merames to him. I'm not allowed to hint to him to do something. So sometimes, you know, you call the non-Jew in and you're pointing at the light switch. So you're pointing at the lights being off and you're pointing at the light switch that you want them to do something with. So it's quite apparent what it is that you want them to do. Now again, there are certain situations where we may allow certain, under certain conditions, for you to ask a non-Jew to do something. But we're starting off at the baseline, which is, Amira l'Nachri is not only when I give specific instructions by word, but even when I give instructions b'remiza, even if I do it just by hinting to it, would also be something that would violate the laws of Amira l'Nachri. And so much so, that the halacha would also apply. If I leave a list of instructions on the refrigerator before Shabbos, and I say, I want you to do this, I want you to do that, I don't say a word, not before Shabbos, not on Shabbos, but they know to look at the fridge and to see what are the jobs that are my responsibility for this weekend, that would be something that is subject to Amir l'Nachri as well. It's a very important psak in the Ramah. And this comes up all the time. What happens if we forget to turn off the light bulb in the refrigerator before Shabbos? So what am I supposed to do? So if there's no non-Jew around, you're stuck. Because that's a real malacha. To turn on and off lights on Shabbos is a problem. Of course you can't do that. However, the Shulchan Aruch gives a very fascinating psak, and that is that we refer to that as a psik resha. I don't really need the light on when I open the fridge. There's light on in the kitchen, so I'm fine without it. Now for me, that's still considered a problem. I'm not allowed to do malacha, even if I don't need it. I'm not allowed to cause a malacha to happen by whatever it is that I'm doing. But the Shulchan Aruch does say, if it's only a psik resha, which means, I ask the non-Jew to please open the door of the refrigerator. I don't ask the non-Jew, please turn the light on. I ask him, please open the door. Just so happens that when he opens the door, the light is going to go on. So if it's what we refer to as a psik resha, meaning it's not the primary activity that the non-Jew is being asked to do. He's being asked to do one thing. It just so happens that a secondary outcome of that is, not only is the door going to be open, but the light is going to go on. In such a case, Shulchan Aruch says there would be no problem of Amir l'Nachri on Shabbos. So for example, the example the Shulchan Aruch gives, which is not really relevant today, the Shulchan Aruch says you are not allowed to sweep the floors on Shabbos. Now obviously it doesn't mean our houses have to be a wreck. It's talking about in the days when they had dirt floors. So every time you sweep, you're potentially flattening out the ground, you're smoothing out the ground beneath you. So sweeping was considered to be a potential malach on Shabbos. Now would I be allowed to ask a non-Jew to sweep the floors of my house on Shabbos or not? So, all I'm asking him to do is to please clean up the mess. Just so happens that by the wayside, it's also going to flatten out the ground. That would be a psik resha. The Shulchan Aruch says, asking a non-Jew to do one malacha, which in turn is going to cause something else to happen, but the thing I'm asking him to do directly is really permissible. I know that the outcome is going to be something that is not permissible. That is not considered to be a problem, and that is permissible. I remember when I was in YU, when we were living in the Heights, so I remember there was a young couple in the neighborhood whose parents had given them an entire Shabbos. I think this woman had just given birth. They went to see their parents on Erev Shabbos. The parents packed them up a whole Shabbos. And they went home. They wanted to be in their own house, their own apartment for Shabbos. They get home. They come to shul Friday night. They realize we left all the food in the car. So, you know, they had just had a new baby. They weren't paying attention. So they left all the food in the car. Problem is, number one, the car is muktzah. But number two, a bigger problem is every time you open the car door, the light is going to go on in the car. So what do? So I said, get a nachri to go open the car door, take out the food and bring it up to your apartment. Not a problem. So he said, what do you mean? But the light is going to go on. But that's exactly the case of the refrigerator. It's not a problem. Why? Because in that case, what I'm asking the non-Jew to do is not turn the light on in the car. I'm asking him to please open the door to get the food out of the car. Happens to be that when he opens the door, the light is going to go on. That's a case of a psik resha. And in a psik resha, that would be something that is permissible. The Gemara Maseches Erevin does talk about a situation where I have a backyard where there's no Erev. So we all live in a small backyard. It's a Rishus HaRabim. It's some kind of Rishus. We don't know exactly what it is. But we have to do a Bris Mila. And we forgot to bring the knife that is going to do the incision. So we don't have the tools. We don't have the antibacterials. We don't have everything we need, the gauze pads. So what do? We have a mitzvah bris mila, and we have a problem here because we don't have an Erev. So the Gemara says, I'm allowed to ask a non-Jew to carry all of the equipment that's necessary to the place where the bris is going to take place. Now the Rishonim have two different issues with that Gemara. Number one, we're not sure, are we referring to a Rishus HaRabim Midaraisa, What is that case? Are we talking about that the non-Jew is going to walk through a Rosh Hashanah Midaraisa and actually violate Hotzah? Or are we talking about it's a little backyard? So it's a small backyard anyway. They forgot to put up an Erev, but it's not as Chamor. It's only Midirabanan. Is that where the Heter was? Or is it even by Rosh Hashanah Midaraisa? Number two, the Rishonim wonder, is that only for the mitzvah of Bris Milah? Bris Milah is considered to be a very important mitzvah. So is that only for the mitzvah of Bris Milah where we would allow such a thing? Or is this a general concept that we would allow it for any mitzvah? If I need to perform a mitzvah, lulav, I forgot my lulav at home. And now, it's not a good example, because Yom Tov you're allowed to carry, and Shabbos we don't shake lulav, so it's a bad example. But to give another example, I forgot my Sefer Torah. We have to lay in shul. Somebody has a Sefer Torah in their house, they forgot to bring it to shul. So am I allowed to ask a non-Jew to carry it through the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim in order that we should all be able to observe the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah on Shabbos? That's the question. So the Rishonim are not sure exactly how we deal with this. The Ramah writes that we are Mekel, that anytime there's any Makom Mitzvah, this is not limited to a Bris Milah, but anytime you have a Makom Mitzvah, you're allowed to be Mekel, to do Amir Lenachri, that he should do the Malacha on your behalf. So these are all just, again, a few pointers before we begin the details of the sugya, but I think it was just important to frame the conversation in this way. Again, a lot more to come, a lot more to think about, a lot more to talk about, very practical examples, something that we confront almost on a weekly basis. But Amir Tzashem, we'll see everybody again next week.